This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for August 14th, 2009, available every Friday on iTunes. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and we have with us Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael.
So this week, we saw some more news about how some stimulus money might be working its way into HPC via investments in U.S. DOE labs and universities. We also saw some news that Penguin Computing looks like it's getting into the HPC on-demand business. But first, we're going to talk about Russia and the Russian government, which seems to have a newfound interest in supercomputing. This story actually surfaced a couple of weeks ago when the Kremlin publicized a Security Council meeting in which President Medvedev complained that Russia is actually falling behind the curve in the supercomputing space, both on the government side and for commercial uses in Russia. You read a little bit about this. What did you make of this, Addison?
Well, it was interesting, as you pointed out, Michael. Russia is one of the top 10 world's biggest economies by GDP and has really a minority of the supercomputing power relative to other similar-sized nations. I mean, you're talking about an economy that's bigger than that of Canada. It's bigger than that of Mexico or Australia. It's about the same as Brazil. It's bigger than Poland, and yet you don't really hear about a lot of high-profile supercomputing installations in Russia. And this was the Kremlin and President Medvedev talking about trying to catch up and indicating this as an important strategic initiative for competing or staying up to date at a country level in the coming decades or in the coming century.
It was interesting to see the head of state actually make sort of a private pitch to the surrounding bureaucrats about this about supercomputing. It's sort of unprecedented, but
I wouldn't say it's completely unprecedented. It was similar to what happened in Japan at the turn of the last decade. The Japanese government highlighted supercomputing as one of its major initiatives for the years ahead. But it is certainly unusual.
It is unusual. I think India has done that, too, at the highest level, where people at the highest level of government have come out. But, I mean, these are countries that are trying to get up to speed and become supercomputing powers or at least parity with some of the larger countries. So I guess it's not too unusual. But, yeah, I mean, they're definitely behind the curve. They're like 15th in the world, according to some estimates, and they're the eighth largest economy. So they figure, like, okay, it's time to sort of join the rest of the community because they realize, I mean, they can see what's going on in the rest of the world, that supercomputing is a strategic technology that other countries are using to develop their capabilities in commercial and even in government. I mean, you know, Russia has almost the same type of security issues that a country like, a much larger country like the U.S. has, and it's got nuclear weapons, and it needs to do these weapons maintenance programs and needs supercomputing for that. So it has sort of that extra onus of responsibility. So in a sense, it was more like it was talking about it, but not a whole lot was said about what they're going to do. I mean, they made some vague, or he made some vague commitments to do more investments and to encourage private industry to get involved. But right now, it's all talk, but it's even good to see the talk. And it's good from everybody's point of view in other countries, because if Russia is doing it, then that's going to encourage other countries who feel like maybe they're not up to speed as well. They're going to be thinking about this as well.
It will encourage other countries, but, you know, if you're talking about the people who are going to benefit from this the most, I think one area you've got to look at one company you should look at very closely is T Platforms. You know, you've been writing recently, Michael, that there is a native HPC player in Russia now that's been bursting onto the scenes. T Platforms was active at the ISC show in Hamburg just recently, and has been doing a lot of product announcements, and there they are in Moscow, and have been gathering up the share of what native home Russian HPC market there is, together with aspirations to compete in Europe and Asia and other parts of the world. So you've got another company that's here in Russia and growing, and a strong base within Russia, if they can pick that up, could also fuel their ability to compete as another European HPC player, or even somewhat looking at it as another Asian HPC player. Russia is kind of both a European and an Asian country, although you primarily think of them as European, and certainly Moscow. Right. But regardless, T-Platforms stands to benefit significantly if there is going to be an expanded initiative.
Right. I imagine they were ecstatic to hear the Russian president talk about this. They're basically, right now, they've got the market cornered as far as the domestic market, as far as the domestic company selling HPC systems. So, yeah, they must be very happy to see this being talked about in the highest level of governments. And they're expanding regardless. They just had an announcement this week, or maybe it was last week, they're going to deploy a system in South Africa. So they're actually expanding beyond Russia and the CIS countries, the former Soviet Union countries. I think they're going to be quite aggressive. But yeah, this is going to be good news for them. And we don't really know at this point if Russia's intent to expand their HPC footprint is going to affect other vendors outside of Russia, or if T-Platforms will get the lion's share of at least the systems money. I mean, there's IBM in Russia, there's HP systems in Russia, as well as some SGI systems, and they've got about two-thirds of the market. I think T-Platforms has the other third, so it's split up more or less evenly in a sense, but depending upon how much Russia decides to go native, if they expand their HPC footprint, it'll be the relative advantage of T-Platforms.
Well, and you're pointing out, Michael, that Russia should have the need for some HPC applications that have to do with national security, and those are the sorts of things where if there is an option to keep things within the borders, if you will, then there's certainly a tendency to want to do that. So I would say that you have to consider T-Platforms to be a leading contender for that kind of application.
Yeah, I would guess that too. It'd be hard to envision that, you know, they're gonna contract IBM to install a Roadrunner for their weapons simulation program.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I would guess the same thing.
The other thing you have to wonder with T-Platforms is the extent to which they'll be able to offer HPC startup services to companies or organizations within Russia or the neighboring CIS countries who are adopting HPC for the first time. This gets around to other stories with other people who've offered cloud services or HPC on demand services, but you're talking about a lot of startup companies HPC adopting companies or HPC adopting organizations in these geographies. If a company like T-Platforms can help them with those sorts of consultative services, then they could stand to benefit there as well.
Right, I agree. And I believe T-Platforms does have an on-demand service. They haven't talked about it very much, but it's in their brochures. I mean, they've actually covered quite a bit of territory with all they're offering. It's not just a system vendor. They've got some expertise in software and compilers and cell technology, cell processor technology. They cover quite a bit of territory. So, yeah, they position themselves very well. And if they are able to offer an extended on-demand service, that would bode very well for the surrounding areas, for, like you said, startups that might not be willing to invest in infrastructure at this point, but are willing to experiment with HPC applications and technology. So,
well, let's bridge from that to the other another story that you'd written about this week with Penguin Computing launching its HPC on-demand services.
Right, right. That was a little bit of a surprise, I think. Since I had known about that they were even considering this, it just sort of got announced, I think, on Tuesday. They're coming up with, now they're calling it sort of a cloud service, but I think to us it's more like HPC on demand. It's not necessarily a cloud, and it's not a virtualized thing. It's basically you can rent cycles from their infrastructure at their facility that consists of something like 1,200 CPUs, strung together with a combination of Ethernet and InfiniBand interconnects. They're selling it basically like IBM is selling their on-demand service, which is called Capacity On Demand, and that Sun Microsystems used to sell Network.com before it sort of faded by the wayside. So it's they're starting up something. It's not a proven model per se. I mean IBM's had this going for a while and they've talked about it some, but it's not like every HPC vendor has this thing, and Sun certainly had its troubles with getting it going. What do you think of this model for system vendors offering sort of these HPC on demand services as a side business?
Well, I mean, the answer is that it depends, and I'll explain what I mean by that. First of all, I have to admit that, like you, I'm a little embarrassed that I didn't know this was coming. I haven't heard from Platform in a while, but you know, from what I know about the company, one of their real strengths has been the integration of that company together with Skilled Software. They've got a lot of the legacy there with the expertise in cluster interconnects and Don Becker, and you know, quite a heritage going back. So they should have the infrastructure necessary to do this sort of thing successfully, and it's not a surprise from a technological standpoint. They've got all the pieces in place. The next thing I'll say about it is that I think you did a good job, Michael, in referring to this, or they do a good job in referring to this as an HPC on demand service. It's not really a cloud service, and you want to be cautious about overusing the word cloud in referring to any kind of virtualized or arm's length implementation. And this is really a lot more like an IBM HPC on demand or what Sun was doing with its dollar per CPU hour for a long time. In terms of a business model for it, the difference between this versus looking at a growing economy with trying to bring people into HPC for the first time in Russia, here you're talking about offering it as a service within a mature HPC economy. And it's not clear to me that Sun or even IBM currently ever was running this that profitably as its own business unit. IBM doesn't really report on what it makes on HPC on demand. I'm not convinced that Sun ever made any money on it. And therefore, what you're getting out of it is whatever kind of halo effect or cross subsidy you get in terms of selling other types of services. Does it help you sell more servers? Does it help you with development by understanding what kind of workflows people are running? It's not to say there isn't any benefit if you've got the extra servers to put online. I haven't spoken with Penguin about it. I don't know what they're hoping to achieve out of it. I haven't seen a company, large or small, yet make a lot of money from that. As far as I could tell, from just offering HPC on demand as a service.
Right. I mean, that's still the big question mark. I mean, we're early in the on-demand and cloud and utility computing life cycle. But to me, it at least potentially seems like a much better fit than some of the other types of clouds like Amazon or even Google. I mean, these are search engines and bookstore vendors that just happen to have a large infrastructure and they're selling this on the side, which might work, but it doesn't seem like the synergy is really there in the same sense where you have a system vendor who understands systems, who understands the software stacks and what these things are about. Now, it depends upon how well you can leverage that to actually make a profit, but potentially, at least, it seems like a better model than some of these sort of other models that sort of are backed into it. But, I mean, time will tell. I mean, it's sort of hard to predict how these things are going to grow and evolve. But I guess I'm a little encouraged that this might be the right model. But yeah, you're right. And we saw Sun and said, you know, I doubt they made any money. And I can't believe they did make any money, or they wouldn't have pulled the plug on it. You know, IBM's had its capacity on demand service going for quite a while, and they've talked about expanding it, and they have expanded it. They've got a handful of on-demand centers. So at whatever level it's worthwhile to them, whether they're making money on it outright or whether they're just able to sell consulting services around it or servers after the fact, we don't know. But at least they have some confidence that this is a valuable thing. And it'll be interesting to see if other HPC companies sort of jump into that as a way to sort of leverage the other parts of their business or to try to make money out of it. I mean, I think it is a hard way just to make money out of it if you're selling just CPU hours for something like this. But let's face it, the margins on the hardware itself are rather small. So even if they can get a small margin on selling CPU cycles, that might be worthwhile to them.
Yeah, it could be worthwhile as long as they're getting a small margin or at least not losing money. As I say, you get a cross-subsidy effect or a halo effect onto other parts of the business. But as far as Amazon EC2 or any of those other kind of real cloud models go for HPC, it really is going to depend very heavily on the use case. I mean, you mentioned yourself, Michael, Ian Foster's recent blog where he was comparing the queue wait time for submitting a benchmark to Amazon EC2 versus how long it waits in a queue on a supercomputer. And I think even that blog was only semi-serious, but takes at least a step toward the right point that you have to consider this in the overall productivity workflow of your organization, and the actual cycle time of how long it takes the job to run is only a very small part of that overall calculation, along with whether or not the cloud is offering the particular service that you need. I mean, if what you want to eat is exactly a Big Mac, then you can get it very quickly from McDonald's. But if you want something other than a Big Mac, you know, your ability to get something like that from McDonald's versus somewhere else might be lower. So, you know, comparing the utility of McDonald's versus a chef, a private chef, is kind of absurd if you don't also know, you know, what is it you want to eat. And that's kind of what you're looking at here with a lot of these cloud services. Can the cloud provide the exact service that it is that you want? You know, and if not, are you better off owning your own cycles? HPC on demand kind of fits in between that. You've got the data, and you need cheap access to, or cheap and efficient access to, some cycles. Maybe you can get them there, and platforms getting into that game.
Penguin, right?
And Penguin is getting into that game.
Yeah, actually, Platform's getting into the game as well.
Platform is also getting into that game, and that's probably why I said that by accident. But Platform is certainly in the private cloud game.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of the middleware vendors like Platform get into it, and now the hardware. And it's becoming a very diverse way of doing it now. I mean, yeah, there's EC2, now there's private, there's system vendors. So it's probably going to be a confusing and diversified market for people looking for cycles for a while, and they're going to have to, you know, do their research and figure out what they need. Do they need the Big Mac, or, you know, do they need the catered service for, you know. So I think until this gets more mature, there's going to be quite a diversity of services out there, and users are going to have to do legwork. Let's turn to the last story we're going to cover before we run out of time here. We noticed relatively big chunks of stimulus money is starting to show up at the DOE labs and some of the universities. Late last week, we saw the announcement of DOE awards on the level of $377 million for these 46 Energy Frontier Research Centers that they announced a while ago. And they just announced the money is going to come in, I think, for the fiscal year 2009 for $377 million, $277 million of which is actually stimulus money. The other $100 million is from their current budget. Plus, this week we saw ESNet is going to receive $62 million out of stimulus money. Now, ESNet is this infrastructure that's being built to connect the 40 DOE National Lab Centers. So all of a sudden we see $200 million all pouring into the government R&D space, and certainly some of this money is going to end up with HPC vendors. I think $59 million of that ESnet money is going to end up with some switch vendor somewhere, presumably for 100 gigabit Ethernet switches, which is the basis of this funding. They're looking to put together 100 gigabit per second wide area network. What's your thoughts on this, Addison?
Yeah, well, first of all, with the stimulus money, this is the sort of thing we were waiting for in terms of the allocations of stimulus money going to programs that eventually ought to benefit HPC vendors, either system vendors or interconnect vendors, software vendors, because the research that the money's tagged for is going to rely on supercomputing resources. Now, when you look at the $377 million for those energy centers, that's not all going to go into high performance computing, and of course a lot of it's going to pay for people and grants and researchers, and then there's other technology areas that have been called out, such as nanotechnology, but certainly some of it will get spent directly on high performance computing, and that's the sort of thing where other stimulus projects, as they start coming through, should also start benefiting HPC. HPC here is a tool that, as people get these various projects and they go to the hardware store to buy their tools, it's going to eventually have an overall positive benefit on the HPC community. Now, this pair of initiatives is also noteworthy in that they're helping to further HPC technologies in the future, not only directly with the ESnet developing a faster network, but also with the power research. One thing we've talked about consistently, Michael, is that one of the challenges these large-scale data center deployments have, or large-scale supercomputing deployments have, is power consumption and cooling, and the development of new energy technologies could help there as well.
Right, it's sort of a little feedback loop there, and the FRC people are actually doing the research into the kind of work that can benefit data centers themselves. But yeah, I mean the wider purpose there is to develop alternative energy sources and technologies that can be used as replacements for fossil fuels and carbon-based fuels. So yeah, it's good to see the money just from a purely social point of view going to this sort of research. We certainly need it, and it was expected to come. There's a lot of emphasis on energy research, obviously, these days. So it's good to see the national labs get it. I think there's going to be 12 DOE national labs getting this, and then there's 31 universities that have been singled out as part of these energy centers. And there's a handful of nonprofit organizations. I think there's one corporate research lab in there, too. So it's good to see that money being spread around, and like you said, some of this is going to filter down to actual vendors, but in the meantime, it's filtering directly into people in our community anyway, the researchers and developers who, sooner or later use HPC in one form or another in the labs and universities. So this is a good thing for us, and it will be interesting to see what other stimulus funds gets headed our way in the coming months and years.
I agree, Michael, and it's going to be interesting to see the overall economic effects as we go through this year as well. From a macroeconomic perspective, we're starting to see some at least slightly encouraging government reports that the economy might have bottomed out and begun the laborious process of turning around the other way. So, whether you attribute that to stimulus money or other private sector effects, we might have better days ahead.
Yeah, let's certainly hope so. I'm looking at those reports too, and it certainly does look encouraging. We'll see the third quarter figures in a few months, and we'll have a better idea. I think that wraps it up for this week's show. Thanks a lot, Addison. That was a good conversation, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Thanks as always, Michael. Talk to you again next Friday.
All right, so long, everyone.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.